An absolute philosopher lives in a world where he alone exists. An absolute philosopher lives in a world where he alone exists. This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, bringing you the absolute philosopher. An absolute philosopher lives in a world where he alone exists. During the year 2000, we had a three-month seminar on campus. And during that three-month seminar, we were doing our very best to learn that we live in a world where we alone exist. And that was a very tough experience. It was a lot of fun, but it was very tough. Because I would have the people realize that they and I, individually, were the only ones here. And so I'd say, I'd like a glass of water. So then all of them would jump up, get me a glass of water, and they'd stack it in front of me. And of course, they would realize that their glass was the only glass that was there. And then as they would walk out a door, if it was a swinging door, they would slam the door behind them, not slam it, but close it firmly. And the person walking, you know, their nose bumps into the door. And they had to remember that they're alone. And the doors are kind of freaky. They close in very inopportune times. But, of course, we have a rule on campus. If you open it, close it. It has nothing to do with anybody else around. The whole purpose of it is teaching you one-pointedness. And everyone laughs when I ask them to do that. If you open it, close it. Because there's nobody else around here. Now, last night, I went through the house at three different times, and three different times I found cabinet doors standing open. One of them was where Ingeborg had gone in to get the vacuum cleaner out and left the door open for the vacuum cleaner video room, you know. You know how where the little vacuum cleaner is kept in the video room? Well, you opened the door and took the vacuum cleaner out and left the cabinet open. Another time I was walking by a cabinet in the kitchen here, and it was wide open, and if I hadn't paid attention, I would have cracked my head in it, you know. And then another time, we were unloading the cabinets, the microwaves from the cabinets, and the cabinets were opened so we could unscrew the screws for them, but the cabinets were not closed. Even when the screws were taken out, the cabinets standing, everybody ducking around the cabinet, and the microwaves were out. They were removed. Now, who opened the cabinet? I came up there, and I found the cabinets open, took the screws out, and took out the microwave, and then the cabinet remained open. Now, whose job was it to close the cabinet? Whoever opened it. Now, don't open it for me. Don't open it for me, unless I ask you to open it. We were carrying the microwave in tonight, and I said, Ingeborg, would you please stand by the door and open it and let us in and close it? Because it was extremely windy and cold outside, and rather than heat up the outside with the house heat, just close the door and then wait till we came. And she did that. And I told Ellen that after we took the microwave out of the expedition, that I would go out and close the back door of the expedition. And Ellen says, no, I will. Now, why did she say she was going to do it? Because she had opened it. And she opened the cabinet door, that is the door to the back of the expedition, and she knew it was her job to close it. Now, I didn't say anything to her about it. That was out of her own mind, out of her own three-month training back in the year 2000, when she learned that if you open it, you close it. In fact, we have a lot of very beautiful statements. What is it, 13 or 18 of them? 13, that we use regularly, and another time, and we use them to train ourselves that we are the only one living in this universe. We can do anything we want to do, but we must take responsibility for ourselves. An absolute philosopher lives in a world where he alone exists. Now, you say, that would be very boring. Well, perhaps. I was talking to our webmaster this morning, and we were talking about what benefit comes from spiritual growth? What benefit comes from spiritual awareness? What benefit comes from being a master, being aware of yourself and being downtown? He said, wouldn't that be awfully boring? And I said, yes, it could be boring. But now consider where you are now as a human being. If you said, I think my thought and it's done, you think your thought and you're independently wealthy. That's a nice idea. Hey, cool. I think my thought and I have the perfect house that I have in my mind. It's right there. I think my thought and I have the perfect children that I would like. I have the perfect wife that I'd like. I have the perfect world that I'd like. I have the business that makes demands upon my intelligence to give me create feeling of creativity. And he said, yeah, that'd be nice. I said, and then if you have any problem, you instantly have the solution and you know what it is. You instantly know everything. And now, boom. An absolute philosopher lives in a world where he alone exists. Everything out there in the world that is around us, we have created. We alone have created it. It's our creation. And everything we look at, we see right through the game it is playing. We see right through the game that a piece of moldy bread is playing. The moldy bread is lying on the ground, perhaps, and no animal or anybody even bothers with it. And it gets moldier and moldier, and sort of back to dust it goes. Well, as an illumined being, as an absolute being, we look at that bread, and we see it at any stage we wish to see it. We see it at the stage where it is bread. We see it at the stage where it is eaten and utilized, or where it is lying on the ground, molding. We see it returning to its dust, returning to its atomic state. We see it just fluttered around here and there, all the little atoms, you know, no longer part of the bread anymore, but now part of the great universe. And we see that. Now, as you are an absolute being, you know all. Now, how many atoms are there in a piece of bread that's molding on the ground? Quite a few. You can't count them, as they'd say, to the tenth power, to the tenth power, to the tenth power. And now, but you, as an absolute being, can look at that piece of bread, as it is still a good piece of bread, and you can recognize that that piece of bread is going to be made into mold, and that it's going to dissipate itself into nothingness, into a bunch of atoms, and that those atoms are going to be used for the creation of a dog or a cat or a human being. And one day, some of the atoms from that bread will be the eye of a person. It will be the hair of a person or whatever, you know. But you, because you are absolute, you see all that is without judgment. You don't say molding bread is bad. You don't say atoms disappearing is bad, but you say you know where every atom goes because you're divine. And so you know that each atom is going to go to an activity. Perhaps a bunch of them are going to be grouped together and go to an activity, maybe become a human body, maybe become the stars in the sky, more stars, maybe become another planet. Who knows? Just that little thing? Yeah, that's a little thing. You know that the atomic bomb is made up of just one little atom, and kaboom, it does most spectacular things. The Big Bang Theory holds to the fact that one atom came out of someplace, no place for it to come out of, but it came out of someplace, and it burst. And then its bursting created the entire galaxies and universes and everything. It sounds fascinating, sounds great. But an absolute philosopher lives in a world where he alone exists, where every thought that comes into his mind is a real thought. Now, he may be thinking his thought on another dimension. He may be thinking his thought in another avenue of understanding. He may be thinking his thought in a way that nobody fully realizes what he's talking about. But, and he doesn't either. But he is living his life completely one with the allness within him. Now, I say to you, each one of you. Tell me the mathematics tables. You can. Now, where did you get it from? Did your teachers teach it to you, or did they merely help you reveal it? If they helped you reveal it, who was the first one to have used it? How did it come about in the beginning? Are you the creator of the mathematics tables? Are you the creator of the teacher telling you that this is something you're revealing from within? Yes, all these things are true. But we don't take that as gospel. We constantly say that we have a teacher, we have a mentor, we have someone showing us the way, and that before the world was, I am, is the way the divine put it. And I mean, from being in the New Testament, in the Old Testament, that is, in the chapters on Genesis, wow, you know, wow. That was quite some thinking for back in the 5000 BC, remember? Or, yeah, AD or BC, whatever it is. But it's way, way back. And that's a long way, you know? When did the BC start? AD start? BC. Before Christ, BC. AD afterwards, you know?
Anno Domini.
Yeah, and so when did that start? Do any of you know? Ellen, when did you start it?
2000, 0.
Yes, you started in 0. But how old was Jesus?
Oh, that's 2,000 years ago. 2,004 years ago.
Well, Jesus' birth correlated with the time that the time was established to be the beginning of the time that we have
counting.
Now. And interesting, isn't it?
Just
now, why would this man be so significant? And nobody recognizes that. Nobody recognizes. He was 33 in the year 33, wasn't he? Something like that. Mm-hmm. Kind of fascinating. But of course, it wasn't the time at that time, was it?
No.
It wasn't the time at that time, because at that time they were using other calendars and other programs. And if I may be excused, it wasn't the time at that time because you, in establishing the time at that time, were using other calendars. You were using I think the Hammurabi's had a calendar, and the various other peoples who lived in those days had calendars, and finally they were all put together by the country that was the most dominant. Who was that? Rome. And they established the calendar, and they established all these things. So, you see, the absolute philosopher lives in a world where he alone exists. So you, I, we, as the absolute philosopher, we were living in the time of Rome. We were living in the time of creation of the calendar. We were living in the time of Genesis. We were living in the time before that. We were living in the time when the cavemen lived, where all sorts of other beings lived. It's quite interesting, you know. But we were living at that time. Why? Because go ahead.
Because all time is now.
All time is now, and also we are the allness. We are the allness. And as the allness, we know that. We know that, and we're living it. An absolute philosopher lives in a world where he alone exists. Now, can you tell me what it's like, back in the early 1900s. And you say, sure, in the early 1900s, and you could just go and talk, and you'd probably be right, even though you hadn't been there. You'd probably be right. But you'd be right only if you let go. If you would say, just a minute, I got to read some books, then you'd be telling someone else's story. And that may be right, and that may not be right. But when you realize that you live in a world where you alone exist, then you can be yourself and have fun with no limitation. But it takes a little demand for yourself. Are you interested in doing that?
Mm-hmm.
An absolute philosopher lives in a world where he alone exists. Well, I told our webman, I said, living in absolute could be a charming experience because you know everything. And you are observing everything, but you're not judging and you're not controlling anybody else's life. Living in the relative, you know everything and you're observing everything, but you feel that you must control everything. And that's the big difference between the absolute and the relative. The absolute is, and the relative manipulates, seeking to accomplish what it feels it should do. Now, neither way need be boring. Neither way need be something that's not very interesting, because they're both very interesting. But it's up to you to make them interesting. So think about that. An absolute philosopher lives in a world where he alone exists. And when you think about that, that's pretty exciting. That's pretty exciting. But it also is very demanding. I love you, I love you, I love you.